Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. By now, it's pretty likely you have heard this.
How does a bastard, orphan, son of a whore and a Scotsman, dropped in the middle of a forgotten spot in the Caribbean by providence, impoverished and squalor, grow up to be a hero and a scholar?
Or seen the lines, or those about a $10 founding father without a father, transcribed in a number of articles in just about every publication imaginable. Hamilton, an American musical, is ubiquitous, and its reach far exceeds the confines of Broadway's Richard Rodgers Theater. The excitement created by Lin-Manuel Miranda's masterwork bursts the fandom of the musical into a genuine interest in American history. So if you were a museum in Albany, New York, a city where the founding father and first Treasury Secretary spent more than a little time, what would you do? If you answered, put together an exhibition about General George Washington's aide-de-camp and right-hand man, you've had the same thought as the Albany Institute of History and Art. A small exhibition exploring Alexander Hamilton's time in Albany is currently on display, and curator Diane Shuchuk met me there to tell me all about it.
Well, of course, it's the Broadway musical Hamilton that inspired us to deinstall a permanent exhibition gallery and create a brand new exhibition in less than 6 weeks about Alexander Hamilton's connections to Albany.
That's basically unheard of in curatorial practices.
It totally is. We found a great funder, Victor Oberting, and his family, James and Courtney, underwrote the exhibition so that we can get a few significant loans and look at our own collection and mine it to see what things related to Hamilton we owned.
But it's not too much of a stretch because he did spend a lot of time here. The real Alexander Hamilton spent a lot of time here.
Corruption's such an old song that we can sing along in harmony, and nowhere is it stronger than in Albany.
He did. He first came here in October of 1777 on a mission for George Washington to meet with General Horatio Gates so that he stayed at Schuyler Mansion that night. And then for the next, until the year he died, he was coming to Albany regularly alone or with his family to visit the Schuylers or to conduct legal business or to speak at City Hall or try a court case.
What was the first thing you knew you wanted to get for the show?
Oh, the first thing I knew, we do not own a portrait of Alexander Hamilton. We own two prints of him that are after works of art, but we didn't own a portrait. So I went back through Ron Chernow's fabulous biography and a few other books about Hamilton and looked at the photographs he used to illustrate the story, and I found a portrait of him that was owned by Union College. And to make it more exciting, it was painted by Albany's premier portrait painter, Ezra Ames. So Chernow mentions this in the book, saying that Ezra Ames was a frequent visitor to Schuyler Mansion and that he would have met Hamilton there. So Hamilton sat for Ezra Ames, and we were able to borrow this portrait from the Union College Permanent Art Collection.
How old was Hamilton when this was painted?
It was painted, this is an 1810 copy of an 1802 painting. It was not unheard of for artists to paint a painting, keep it, and then make copies themselves for other family members or patrons. This was 2 years before he died, and it's a year after his son Philip was killed in a duel. So it's a more somber Hamilton. It's not the Hamilton we see on the $10 bill. That was after a painting by John Trumbull. It's a Hamilton that is sort of sadder. He's in a plain black suit of the period, and he just is looking sort of sideways.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful to have it here. What are some of the other pieces in the show we should talk about?
Well, we own a really fabulous sculpture of him from 1830 by Robert Ball Hughes. And it's a plaster statue that's about 2.5 feet high. And it was a model that Robert Ball Hughes created for the statue he did of Hamilton for the Merchants Exchange Building in New York. So the merchants hired Robert Ball Hughes to create a sculpture of Hamilton to stand in the rotunda of the building. And the artist created a model, and then he created a full 14-foot high marble statue of Hamilton. But then there was a big fire in Lower Manhattan, so in 1835, that statue was destroyed. So the artist created more copies of the little maquette he did of the statuette. We own one of these statuettes from 1830 that had stayed in the Hamilton family till we purchased it from an antique dealer in 1945. So it's been in our collection for a long time. He kind of is standing right now and in the exhibition in front of a view of Albany from 1806.
Where was he before he came to this little show?
He was sitting in a shelf in storage with lots of other sculptures of other notable Americans.
There's also, you have from Fort Ticonderoga, a beer tankard.
Raise a glass to freedom.
Yes, the museum at Fort Ticonderoga generously lent us a silver tankard inscribed with the initials AH1800 that they had purchased from Alexander Hamilton's grandson or great-grandson back in the 1940s as well. So it's a lidded tankard. It's a fabulous thing. It was made in London about 1763, so it predates when he would have used it, but we also know that Philip Schuyler, his father-in-law, was in London during that year and perhaps purchased the tankard and then gifted it to Alexander in 1800.
Spotlight, Alexander Hamilton is currently on display at the Albany Institute of History and Art in Albany, New York.
We have a few letters scattered in our very extensive library and manuscript collection at the museum. And we have a letter that Hamilton writes to Eliza in October 22nd, 1803. He's in Kinderhook. He's coming up. He had just left Claverick in Columbia County. He was working on a court case for his mother-in-law, who was an heiress to John Van Rensselaer's land. And he then stopped in Kinderhook overnight. He wasn't feeling well. And he wrote Eliza a letter where he starts the letter saying, "I'm here, my beloved Eliza, on my way to Albany." So we love that. It's just a sort of a way to tell her what his schedule is for the next week or two before he says he takes a sloop back home from Albany. So it's just a charming little note he scribbled that somehow survived, and we're so thrilled to own it. And it's actually, if you want to read it, the Library of Congress has a great website called foundersonline.gov, and you can go Google this letter or any letter he wrote to Eliza, and you could read the transcription. So it's a fabulous resource online. You can read all the letters he wrote, they wrote back and forth to each other, that have been transcribed.
1 week later, I'm writing a letter nightly. Now my life gets better every letter that you write.
So in the musical, she burns a lot of their letters.
Yes.
Did that not happen, or did she that to some of them, but some survive?
Nope, she did that. She burned the letters that he sent to her so that no one would ever know how she felt about the scandalous affair he had with Maria Reynolds.
I'm erasing myself from the narrative.
But she did save, and she made a point after he died to collect all the letters back.
I put myself back in the narrative.
Right. So she, and I'm a big fan of the musical too, so she actually gathered these letters back, and this is part of our National Political Figures autograph collection. We have presidents, vice presidents, governors, and notable Americans.
First Treasury secretaries.
Yes, First Treasury. And we have a letter in the case here, kind of talking about his role as Secretary of the Treasury. That was the biggest part of Washington's cabinet. He had 30 people working for Hamilton. This is a short note that he writes to, this was a man who was the superintendent of Indian Affairs. He asked to release $60,000 to John Keene so that he doesn't explain why, but we have this, and he signs it as Secretary of the Treasury.
There are some newspapers on the wall over here.
Right. The saddest part of his story is his untimely death at such a very young age before he could have accomplished so much more. Albany was grief-stricken after Hamilton died. He was kind of a native son. He was here so often. Everybody knew him. He would hang out at the Tontine Coffee House. He attended church services. He was staying with his in-laws at Schuyler Mansion. So after his death, there was no internet. There was no way to find out exactly what happened. So the newspapers here, in particular the Albany Register and the Albany Sentinel, printed supplements to their own newspaper outlining what happened right before the duel, who was involved, and they reprinted the letters between Burr and Hamilton and their seconds, Van Ness and Pendleton, trying to avoid the duel and talking about this particular dinner party where Hamilton calls Burr dangerous and despicable.
I have the honor to be your obedient servant, A. Ham.
They also print Alexander Hamilton's will, and they do have a little a sidebar article about what all the citizens of Albany did to commemorate his death and acknowledge his death.
Do you want to read what that said?
Sure, okay. I can read that. The Albany Sentinel, on July 24, 1804, responded to Hamilton's death by saying, "We, the merchants and other citizens of Albany, impressed with a just sense of the merit attached to the character of Alexander Hamilton by his distinguished military services during the late Revolutionary War, his eminent display of talents and services as a statesman, and his exalted principles of honor and integrity, do feel a deep sense of sorrow and regret at the untimely death of that truly great man, and we do unanimously agree to wear a band of crepe around the arm for the space of 6 weeks as a testimonial of veneration and esteem for departed merit and as a badge of mourning for the loss experienced by our country in the death of so valuable a citizen.
What is a legacy?
It's a big gesture.
It is a big gesture, yes. And who was to be Union College's president, Eliphalet Knott, delivered an incredibly important sermon at the Dutch Church in 1804 about the death of General Hamilton, where he basically calls him a virtuous citizen. He describes him in all these ways. It goes on for pages and pages. And then he says, this is really one of the first times where he really goes against gun violence. It's a sermon you can read online. You can just Google Eliphalet Knott, death of General Hamilton, and you can see how he talks about you shouldn't use guns or any kind of to settle basically disagreements.
And then this corner has a different kind of tie to Albany. Tell us about Hamilton Grange.
Yes, so we have one corner of the gallery dedicated to his house, Hamilton Grange, which is owned by the National Park Service. It's in Harlem Heights. It's on 141st Street and St. Nicholas Avenue in New York City. Hamilton rented homes until he got to a place in his life he could afford to build a house. So he built himself a country house on 32 acres, and he named it after his ancestral home in Scotland, after his grandfather's house called The Grange. So The Grange sits today, it's open for visitors, and it's been moved twice. And the National Park Service hired our local firm, architectural preservation firm of John G. Waite Associates from Albany, they also have a New York City office, to supervise moving of the house to preserve it, to supervise the restoration of the house, the reconstruction of the side porches and the front stairs, and then to come up with an interior look, to create a furnishing plan for the house. Because no one really knows what Hamilton's house looked like. There are examples of his furniture, and we own two chairs from Hamilton Grange. If you come to the gallery, you will see one of the chairs, a beautifully federal inlaid chair with bell flowers and satinwood and mahogany. And they, Jack Waite's office, with his partner Doug Booker and a number of other people at the firm, determined, they looked at probate inventories of other house museums, of other people that lived in New York at the time, and they just found carpets that would have been available to Hamilton, they found fabrics that would have been available to Hamilton, to then create a new interior with carpets and window treatments and new furniture. They had all the furniture replicated, because instead of borrowing from all the different museums, they hired the firm of Fallon and Wilkinson to copy the pieces that were in museums, so that the Grange has copies of museum-quality pieces, and you can go today and experience a beautiful interior with beautiful fabrics, and you can come to the Albany Institute to see the fabric patterns and the carpet patterns in the small exhibition, in the corner of this exhibition.
So recognizing that the history and the musical is for everyone, I wonder, though, are young Hamilton fans coming to the Albany Institute when they mightn't have before?
I think they are, because I was flipping through our guest book, which is in another gallery. It's in our Masterworks paper exhibition. And some young person wrote, "I like the Hamilton show. I'm not throwing away my shot." We just were thrilled that they took the time to walk to another space and write something down.
Why do you write like you're running out of time?
Write day and night like you're running out of time.
Every day you fight like you're running out of time.
Keep on fighting in the meantime.
Spotlight, Alexander Hamilton is currently on display at the Albany Institute of History and Art in Albany, New York. Curator Diane Shuchuk has been our guide. The Schuyler Mansion State Historic Site in Albany is also offering Hamilton-centric tours, and the Albany County Convention and Visitors Bureau has created a self-guided walking tour around the city. Links to more information are posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.